The following program was pre-recorded for broadcast at this time.
Hi, this is attorney Jeffrey Meldon. On our Law Talk Live radio show, we're going to highlight some of the incredible guests that we've had on our Meldon Law and Friends podcast as we approach our 150th episode. Many of our loyal listeners from Law Talk Live may not know about our podcast, which airs on Facebook Live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. from Spurrier's Gridiron Grill in Gainesville, Florida. And we bring on guests from all over North Central Florida and beyond. Stay tuned to listen to the following interview from one of our amazing guests and head on over to our Facebook page and hit the like button so you do not miss any of our upcoming shows. For more information on our podcast, please give us a call at 352-373-8000 or visit our website at meldonlaw.com. We've got a great show for you today. We've got Matt Carrillo, who's an attorney specializing in workers' comp law, who's going to be talking about workers' comp. A lot of workers get injured, and he helps them to get back onto the road to recovery. So we're going to take a short break on Meldon Law and Friends, and we'll be back.
Meldon Law has been serving personal injury victims since 1971. In those days, Jeffrey Meldon's presence as an attorney in the music scene dubbed him with the nickname The Hippie Attorney. And although times have changed, two things haven't. Our commitment to bettering our community by helping the injured.
Albert, are you ready to go to the game?
And our love for the Florida Gators.
If you bleed orange and blue, Meldon Law is the firm for you.
Welcome back to Meldon Law and Friends. I'm Jeffrey Meldon, founder and attorney at Meldon Law. I want to welcome everybody who's listening and watching our show today. Our guest today is Matt Carrillo, who is with the Carrillo Law Firm and specializes in the area of workers' compensation. Welcome to the show, Matt. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Well, good. I've known your family for years and years. Your dad, of course, I don't know, is your dad still working in the business at all?
He's still of counsel with me, so he still works, yeah.
Okay, well, he's got wisdom, right?
Yes.
I think, and he's wise because he's got a really smart son who is taking over the family business and a little similar to what we do at Meldon Law.
Exactly.
You know, it's pretty cool that, you know, we have generational law firms now in Gainesville, because when I started here in the 70s, there really wasn't any generational law firms, and that, meaning that where the son or daughter followed in the father's footsteps and was involved in the law firm. So it's really changed quite a bit. I notice, you know, there's a lot of that going around now. And it makes sense after someone starts a law firm and builds it up over years and years and years and has a clientele, it's really nice to have somebody follow in footsteps.
Absolutely, and I know from other attorneys that I speak to, they're one of the largest difficulties they have is mentorship, and when you have a parent that's guiding you along, you have a built-in mentor for a very difficult career to figure out how to operate in it. So it's invaluable to start and join a family firm.
Yeah, and you know, there's some father-son duos or father-daughter duos or mother-son, mother-daughter duos that have difficulty navigating it because you've got the personal relationship, you know, father to son in our case, and as well as the legal arena to navigate.
How are you doing on that? Do you ever have to tell Dad to chill out?
Oh, there's never been anything that's ever been an issue. It's a growth process. You know, you grow as a partner in a law firm, but you also grow with that father and son relationship, just I'm sure as you have. And so those both evolve together. But I think they grow stronger as well.
Yeah, I mean, I feel really blessed that I have a succession plan, and that which means, you know, in your case, your dad's of counsel, which means that he still gets some money, yeah. Right?
Yes.
Yes. And that's how we, in my case, I'm still pretty involved on a daily basis. You know, when I don't have to show up at 7:30 in the morning like I used to when I was a young lawyer. They let me show up, a little later. However, I've still got the excitement and energy, and I like to think that the mentoring that you refer to is the fact that after you've been practicing for 40 or 50 years, you have a breadth of knowledge and experience, so you can navigate some of the difficult waters that we as attorneys have to deal with.
Absolutely. But it's not just the cases. It's how do you interact with opposing counsel? How do you interact with a difficult client? Or how do you interact with, on top of just a difficult case? It's a global type of relationship that's...
Yeah, running the business. How do you manage the team at the office, right?
And, exactly.
Keep things, I think we learn after a while that, our team members are invaluable, and we need to really encourage them to grow and learn and, pay them well. And if you want to keep people, you got to, treat them right.
Absolutely.
So let's start off. I know a lot of people have heard the term workers' compensation. Can you give us a little historical perspective on what workers' compensation law is, how it evolved in the state of Florida, and where we're at right now?
Absolutely. I won't bore you with the really old, archaic starts of it, but essentially, all across the country, and including the state of Florida, every single state was tasked with figuring out a way to reasonably and fairly deal with people that got hurt on the job, in which they weren't going to sue their employers for a negligence action and essentially bankrupt employers for a catastrophic injury. But you can't leave these injured workers with no avenue to be compensated. And so each state has their own workers' compensation system in which they outline benefits that a person is entitled to when they get hurt on the job. Now, a long time ago, they did something that's called the grand bargain, in which all of the common law remedies that most people think of when they get hurt at the fault of another person or a company, you have medical treatment, lost wages, pain and suffering, loss of enjoyment of life, that whole range of remedies. The bargain was, we're going to only give injured workers two of those remedies, medical treatment and lost wages. Nothing else they're entitled to. However, it's going to be a no-fault system, meaning you don't have to go in and prove that your employer was the cause of the injury. Anyone that gets hurt on the job is entitled to these two categories of benefits, for good or bad. That's what the system was built to create and allow for.
So how do you determine when you're on the job? You know, if I'm driving to work, am I on the job? If I'm leaving work, am I on the job? If I go to lunch, am I on the job? How do you determine those issues?
Excellent question. And so there are particular examples that you just mentioned that are specifically excluded from being a work injury. So you mentioned going to the job. There is something called the going and coming rule, where it says if you are on the way to or leaving the job, that it's not a covered injury. But there are a lot of little circumstances where it can be different. What if you're walking from the job to a parking lot and the injury occurs in that time? Or is it a employer parking lot? Or is it a public parking lot? Are you working as a on-call tradesperson that drives a company truck and is essentially on call up until they clock out once they get home? That could be an injury even though you're leaving home, but you're on call. So there are some standards that you look at. And in general, if you're on the way to a job or leaving and going home, it's not covered. But there are some times where it could be.
What if you go out for lunch?
That could be, depending on the circumstances. It's all very factual-based, individual circumstances. And so there is a set of rules where, let's say you're a traveling employee. And so you could think of like an airline attendant. And they have a layover and they're getting lunch. Those could be covered injuries because that's a part of the employment. If you have a mandatory lunch meeting for a job that you have to go to, that could be a covered injury. But if you are just an individual that clocks out, goes to grab a bite to eat, it's very likely it could not be covered because it's not a part of the employment. It didn't arise from the employment.
So it's kind of, it's similar to the going and coming rule. When you leave the office to go out for lunch, you're not in your employment unless there's some circumstances that make it, you know, either mandatory or related to work. And then when you get back to work, then you're covered.
Yes, there is something called a personal comfort doctrine in which a break in the workday where, let's say, you're standing outside and, you know, going to grab a snack from the convenience store or something, that could be covered. But it all really depends on every individual scenario to make that determination.
So over the past 30 or 40 years, there's been some significant changes in the workers' comp law. Can you discuss a few of the changes that have occurred?
Absolutely. I would say of the past 30 to 40 years, there's been a few major legislative changes. The first one starting in the 1993 to 1994 area, because there were two sets in those years, in which they significantly reduced the amount of benefits available to an injured worker. They took away a significant amount of choice in physician. They also took away a significant amount of post-injury wage availability. And those changes have stuck. The next set of major changes occurred in 2003, where they reduced the amount of permanent benefits an individual could get. They reduced the amount of changes in doctor that a person could get, along with some lost wages as well. Since then, the only major changes have probably been to the attorney's fee provisions that occurred again in 2009. But for the most part, it was those major, major times.
Yeah. You know, I did a little bit of workers' comp back in the early 90s. I probably called your dad every case I had, right? And say, you know, Carl, what do you think about this situation? But back then, the attorney fees were, I think, 25% after, you know, actually, even with higher amounts, I think attorneys were getting as much as 25% fees.
It's changed quite a bit. And so there is a statutory amount where it's a tiered amount of a fee based upon the recovery. And back then, it was a 20% fee at the most part. Or it was 25, 20, and 15 percentages. They changed that to a 20, 15, 10. And that's when a lot of people said, nope, I'm not doing this anymore, and they got out of the business.
Well, the problem was that 20% was on the first 5,000 and then 15 on the next 5,000.
Yes.
So you can't really make a living handing $10,000 cases because your overhead is more than that.
Absolutely.
So you're really dealing with 10%. And from the standpoint of people listening and injured workers, they're really – if it's a significant injury, the attorney's only getting 10%.
Correct.
Of whatever fee is generated. Now, is there a fee generated unless there's kind of, without a settlement, or do you have to go to a settlement conference to get a fee?
Good question. And I'll also tie that into how the fees have changed, because currently the statute states that it's that 2015-10, essentially a 10% attorney's fee on settlements. However, that was declared unconstitutional back in 2015, where you can apply for an enhanced attorney's fee within the Florida Bar Guidelines. However, it has to be judicially reviewed and approved. And the judges are very strict on how they scrutinize whether one is deserved or not. So it's not an automatic approval of that enhanced fee. You also have to have, you have to show that you've earned it, you're entitled to it. And it's a tough kind of battle sometimes to figure out what's going to be the best pathway forward from a business perspective. Regarding attorney's fees ongoing in the case, those were stripped from the law in 2003. They were brought back in 2008, taken away again in 2009, brought back in 2015. So we've had a yo-yo of that, and the essential basis behind it is if you have a wrongfully denied benefit, wrongfully denied, that the insurance company is supposed to authorize for this injured worker, whether it be back pay, whether it be a type of treatment that's been recommended by a doctor, an authorized doctor that the insurance company has chosen, anything that's wrongfully denied, if the attorney can establish that they got that benefit and that it passed the certain timelines that was the safe harbor provision for that insurance company, then the insurance company can be liable to pay an attorney's fee in the interim of a case going on.
So if you have an injured worker, they have to report the injury to their employer within a certain time period, right?
Within 30 days.
Okay.
Very short time to report an injury.
And then what happens after that? What's the, you know, beginning part of a workers' comp case?
And so once that injury is reported, that's the obligation of the injured worker. At that point, the obligation from the employer and insurance company is to send that person for a medical evaluation. Most often, if this isn't a serious injury that where they're going to the emergency room, they are sent to an urgent care facility to be evaluated. And they usually do the full check of, does a diagnostic exam need to take place with an MRI or an X-ray or a CT? Do they need to be referred immediately to a specialist, or do they need physical therapy or some simple medications? But for the most part, this system is supposed to operate automatically. You're not supposed to need people stepping in and getting an attorney for this to take place. I only step in when things aren't occurring as they should.
Okay, so the injured worker can handle that part on their own.
It's supposed to occur that way.
But sometimes they'll call you and they'll say, Matt, what should I do? Do you advise them how to go through the process of reporting the injury and what happens next?
Oh, very often I have people call up, whether it's through a prior client or referral, that call me very early on and they say, I had this injury. I have not been to a doctor and it's been 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And this is someone that hasn't been able to return to their job because of these injuries and pain they're in, but they haven't been evaluated. And most large employers, they have a HR person in place that automatically reports it to the insurance company. Insurance company starts getting their file together. But some smaller employers don't necessarily report it timely, or they send them to an urgent care that wasn't part of the authorized group they're supposed to send to, and it slows down the process. So I have to step in. I have to find out who the insurance carrier is for that employer, and I have to contact them and start the claims process from the beginning. And it's 2-3 weeks past when all that should have occurred.
So if somebody is injured and after a few days, they figure out, oh, this is not going to go away, I've got something, that's a good time to call an attorney.
Absolutely. It's not a difficult process to get authorized for medical care at the beginning of a case. Walk-in clinics, these urgent cares, are very easily authorized. It's not difficult for an insurance company to fax over an authorization. If they haven't done that, there's something slowing the process down, and that's when I like to step in, to get medical treatment going as quickly as possible.
Well, what if the employer isn't sure whether or not it's a covered accident?
That's an excellent question, because that also lets an employer know what they're supposed to do. They don't need to make that decision. They just need to report it to their insurance company, and the insurance company can deal with it. They decide whether there's any defenses to the claim or not. They'll ask the employer if there's certain factors that favor it or not. But either way, they're obligated to report that injury to the insurance company.
So after the it's reported, they go to a emergency care facility. The emergency care facilities really aren't set up to do follow-up treatment in most cases.
When you get injured on the job, it's most often an orthopedic injury. Very rarely am I seeing clients come in with internal issues like a cardiac issue, or we're not dealing with diabetes or high blood pressure. Those aren't work injuries unless you're a first responder. They're a little bit separate. Mm-hmm. So you're dealing with a back, an elbow, a knee, or a wrist. Urgent cares, emergency room departments, they are trained to deal with everything that comes into their doors. And so sometimes with an orthopedic injury, you're getting cursory treatment that needs a little bit better of an eye. And so a lot of times it's just getting into that orthopedist once physical therapy isn't working or pain is too intense, or you have a diagnostic that says there's a tear, there's a break, there's a herniation, something that needs a specialist looking at it.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of times we see differences in the reporting in the workers' comp treaters versus personal injury treaters. I don't know if you've ever experienced that.
I have seen it. And I won't say it's the fault of the doctors. They're working in a frustrating system because when you're a patient coming into a doctor, you're expecting to have this relationship with your physician, a very private relationship that you're establishing trust with them. And you're not expecting them to send your records off to some stranger for approval of treatment and review of whether this treatment is appropriate. In workers' compensation, that doctor has been picked by the insurance company, and that doctor is obligated to send daily reports of every time they see that person of what happened, why it happened, was it related, is this treatment necessary. And they might also have a nurse that's assigned to the case to then ask them questions about the treatment and what's appropriate. And so doctors can get frustrated as to what they are looking at. And they're also limited. They get authorizations for particular conditions and for particular body parts that they can't go without, or else they don't get paid.
So. Yeah, I know. What we find a lot of times is that the insurance company adjuster or nurse, their job is to get the person back to work as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they get a person back to work prematurely, and they can actually cause more damage to, neck, back, shoulder, knee, whatever the orthopedic injury is.
Absolutely. I see that quite a bit, where you could have someone that gets injured on the job and they're given restrictions of, let's say, a 25-pound lifting restriction. That doctor doesn't necessarily know that as long as the person doesn't go above that lifting restriction, they won't injure themselves further. It's impossible for a doctor to know that. And so you could have an injured worker that goes back to their job within their restrictions, and they could just get hurt further. And then that employer and insurance company become responsible for that further injury. And so it's always tricky scenario to know, how do you prevent injury from occurring again? How do you get this person healed as quickly as possible? And you have to deal with the wants and needs of the insurance company, what the doctor says, what's best for the injured worker. And everyone's just trying to do what's best.
Now,
you
were talking about injured workers getting pay when they're out of work, and it's been recommended by a physician that they could not go back to work. What kind of compensation do they get?
So when injured workers cannot return to work at all, and a doctor says, do not return to work, you need to heal, stay home, mm-hmm. anything you do could hurt, make you worse, that's what's called a temporary total disability status. Mm-hmm. And that's when they get roughly two-thirds of their pre-injury wages.
Which is just enough to starve to death.
The system is set up to not get someone as much as if they were working.
Correct.
Their net pay from a paycheck almost always, and I would say I don't know if I've ever seen it to where someone makes more money being out of work on comp. They will always make less.
What if they're, an auto crash and they're also getting, you know, PIP benefits and some other benefits? How does that interact and work?
Well, I'm sure you know because we've got cases like that. That's always a fun complication because you have two primary insurance policies. You have workers' compensation, which is primary, and you also have a PIP policy that can be primary. But in an ideal world, workers' compensation is doing everything they're supposed to, and that person is getting all the treatment they need through that policy. And then you can use that PIP coverage to kind of fill in the gaps later on. That gives them a little bit more freedom of choice with physician if they think they need some additional treatment. It can go to pay some additional lost wages if those are being in dispute somehow. They have different thresholds as to whether they're entitled to those benefits or not.
Well, listen, Matt, it's been great talking with you. I want you to give a little plug for the law firm. Tell people how to get a hold of you if they have a need in a workers' comp case.
I appreciate it. This has been fantastic, and if you ever need me again, I'll be here. But it's Carrillo Injury Law. Our website is carrilloinjurylaw.com. Our phone number is 352-371-4000. And every single time someone calls, they're getting in touch with our wonderful staff or myself, and we're going through every single case and making sure that we can treat everyone exactly how they want to be treated.
I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Meldon Law and Friends, and I hope the information we've given to everybody is helpful. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Hi, this is Attorney Jeffrey Meldon. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and we look forward to Law Talk Live for you next week. And go Gators!